to the latest episode of the People Who Talk podcast. Joining me is Maria. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
And special guest, Pádraig Ryan. It's a long way from Tipperary, and here he is now in Spain. How's it going, Pádraig?
Hey, Enda. Hey, Maria. Very good, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
So, Pádraig, as I alluded to in my brief introduction there, you are from the fine county of Tipperary. You lived for a time in Cork, the second city of Ireland, a great place as well. And now you find yourself in Guadalajara as an immigrant to this fine country of Spain. So starting off with the classic question we always ask in the podcast when we are talking to somebody who's not from Spain. What are your first impressions of Madrid? What do you think about Spanish culture? Has it been a huge culture shock, or have you settled in pretty nicely?
Yeah, all of the above. I'm living in Guadalajara rather than Madrid, so it's not quite the buzzing metropolis where you find yourself in. It's more of a sleepy town, but it has its moments as well during the festivals, or I think the Christmas Eve, there was a huge kind of big outdoor party here. But yeah, so far so good. I arrived back in the 23rd of August, so I've been here like 5 months. I remember arriving off the plane into Madrid and just kind of that feeling of stepping into an oven, which, you know, every Irish person who's ever traveled to Spain has had that experience. And yeah, quickly getting to figure out how to use the air conditioning in my hotel room. That was an important step. What else then? Yeah, no, it's generally been all very positive. Like, apart from the weather, which is a huge difference, I guess the architecture, you know, the balconies, the way the streets are laid out, you know, it's all just quite different from back home. Guadalajara or possibly Madrid are a lot more pedestrian friendly as well. There's so much more pedestrian crossings, zebra crossings here, which, yeah, makes life much easier in terms of getting around the city. Even stuff like the bins being on the streets, those big huge bins where you can just throw your stuff in, it's completely different from Ireland. The food, the tapas culture. With the weather, there's just a lot more plazas, outdoor seating. There's just a lot more opportunity to be outdoors in a pleasant environment, whereas in Ireland we tend to often, you know, be looking for shelter or running into the, you know, looking for the nearest pub with an open fire or, you know, a cafe or something. So completely different in that sense. Then I'm still getting to grips with Spanish. So as that continues to improve, it's going to open up more doors and just, you know, being able to communicate confidently and again, just makes everything that bit easier. But I found that people are quite friendly and patient here. And, you know, when they see you're a pale-faced Giri who has more of the me tars and Eugene level of Spanish, they kind of, you know, help you out a bit, slow down the speed and, you know, do their best to communicate with you. So in a nutshell, yeah, so far so good.
I think that's really interesting to hear your impressions, because we usually talk to people that maybe have been here for quite a while now. So it's just quite nice to, you know, well, we will ask you maybe in 2 years' time again and see how your impressions have changed. Hopefully they're still good. No, but yeah, I think it's an interesting viewpoint, because you've been here, you know, so little, really. But we also wanted to ask you, because, you know, we tend to talk about the Irish experience here. But, you know, when you think of immigrants, for example, back home, as an Irish person, in your opinion, you know, what are good things and bad things about living in Ireland as a foreigner? You've just told us about your experience here, but, you know, if you thought of it the other way around, how do you see it?
Yeah. If I was to start with the cons, like right now in Ireland, cost of living has gone through the roof. there's a housing crisis, so finding accommodation is so, you know, extremely difficult. And then I think, yeah, the Irish weather, the famous Irish weather. You can have four seasons in one day. You can have just the unpredictability of it. It's, I kind of sometimes say to my students, the Irish weather is like the emotions of a small child. You never really know what you're going to get, and it's hard to predict more than an hour or two in advance what's coming. The contrast of that with Spain, you know, it's night and day. So I think, you know, for immigrants who've come, like in my previous job in Cork, I was working in a language, in an English language school. We had a lot of international students from Brazil to South Korea. I think a lot of them struggle just with the unpredictability, you know, the likelihood of a shower or a rainfall at any moment. That definitely takes getting used to. And just the days that you could go for days on end without seeing the sun at all, you know, just cloudy, overcast weather. I imagine if you've come from Spain, Italy, Brazil, any country with plenty of sunshine, that's a shock to the system. Then I think as well, like any immigrant who goes to a country, it can be hard to get to know people, become friendly with people. And I'd say as well, because Ireland now has so many immigrants, it's like, say, if you come from Brazil, it's easy to naturally slip into the Brazilian community. And then you kind of end up sort of almost being an outsider. You know, you make your connections within the Brazilian community. And then, yeah, you're living in Ireland, but you're maybe just not quite, you don't necessarily feel a part of the, you know, the locals. And but that's, I think that's the same in any country you go to. If there is a significant proportion of people from your own country, like, you know, and you're in Madrid and just quite a large Irish community there, whereas in Guadalajara it wouldn't really be the case. So, you know, that's probably a good thing in a way. It kind of, it forces you to make more of an effort to, you know, just engage and befriend the locals. Then in terms of the positive things about moving to Ireland or living in Ireland as an immigrant, I'd say, like, I don't know, the people, the sense of humor, the friendliness. I think people tend to, you know, we can always put ourselves down, but we do kind of, yeah, I think we are quite friendly as a people, helpful. And maybe compared to other countries, the pace of life might be that bit slower. So maybe people feel less stressed in their day-to-day life, which means that, you know, they've time to interact, or, you know, they've time to maybe help people out. Even stuff like the music culture in Ireland, I miss that. The kind of, there's a lack of a live music scene in Guadalajara compared to Ireland. In Ireland, you know, every big city, every small town even, there's always some opportunity to see live music in bars, whether it's, you know, rock or trad music. There wouldn't be the same culture here, I think. So I think that's a positive thing about moving to Ireland. What else then? And the pub culture in Ireland as well. That can be a blessing and a curse. But I think there's something special about, you know, when you're having a good night in an Irish pub and the opportunity just to interact with strangers, have fun with them, have the crack, as we say in Ireland. Yeah, it's a pretty special atmosphere. It's something like Irish bars. You can find an Irish bar, an Irish pub in every corner of the world, but there's always something missing or something not quite the same as the experience that you get in Ireland. So is that enough positives?
I'll take it.
Well, Linda definitely takes it, and I, of course.
Well, yeah, I think it's interesting, Parik, some of what you said there. I think, you know, to give my two cents about the cons of Ireland, something that, you know, things that people always mention, certain things like the weather, which I think is definitely a very important factor. For me, I've always felt that the public transport in Madrid makes life so possible, to have like an actual life, you know, and go around to different areas, while in Cork, fair enough, it's small, you could probably walk to most places, but public transport wouldn't be so good in Ireland, you know, and that would affect the quality of life. While the bar culture, I think that's actually something in Spain people don't talk maybe enough about, because like, as good as the terrace culture is in Spain and the gourmet gastronomic side of things, Spanish bars like just aren't designed for people to stay there for a long time. Like, you're supposed to have a quick cania and go on, and they're kind of very austere places as well. They're not really comfortable with the lighting or the aesthetic, you know. So I think they're kind of interesting things about both sides of those two countries. But Pádraig, you mentioned you were working in a charity shop working as an English teacher back home, but you also worked in a charity shop as a manager. And there's two questions really I want to ask you about that, because one, it was kind of like a nexus for all these international communities, which I'm sure was a very dynamic and enjoyable thing for you to experience as the manager of that place. And I guess for people who are from different cultures, it was a nice, safe space for them to maybe fit in and talk to Irish people and maybe meet other foreigners as well. What was it like being responsible for a charity shop? You know, you're in a prime location, you're dealing with foreigners, you know, working there, dealing with Irish old women working there as well. You're representing this massive organization with this massive goal as well. Was it quite a unique experience working in that kind of environment for a variety of reasons, I imagine? I don't know. How would you kind of describe it to us?
Yeah, I guess it was a unique experience. I kind of fell into the job without a grand plan. I started volunteering there just kind of a couple of days, and then I think the assistant manager left, they offered me that place, and then the main manager left and they offered me that job as well. So it just kind of was a gradual sort of, it just happened naturally like that. But yeah, just when you're saying it there, like there was a really big mix of you said old, I prefer like the young to the young at heart. But fair, yeah, enough. Like, so you'd have a lot of older women from the kind of Cork City or the area who would have been volunteering for, some of them would have been in the shop for over 20 years volunteering. And then you could have someone who had just arrived into Ireland from South America or from Europe. I think for whatever reason, it all just kind of seemed to work. There was a great atmosphere there. Everyone seemed to get on. There was always some kind of something new happening because of the nature of charity shops. Every day you're going to get donations in. So, you know, it was always, the majority tended to be clothes, but you never knew what you were going to get. Like everything from, you know, antique books to someone's collection of ornaments to, I think one time someone donated a child's gas mask, which went back to World War II, I think. We put it out on the shelf until a customer reminded us that it contained some product within that could be harmful to humans. So yeah, we decided it was better to take it off the shelf again. The dynamic of the shop, then you were getting a lot of, the shop was located on the North Main Street, which also had about 7 or 8 other charity shops. And I think what happened is people tended to do their rounds in the morning. You could set your clock by the time that some customers would come in. And yeah, you'd really get to know the characters of Cork from, you know, dealing with them or seeing them come in on a regular basis. There was a guy who used to come in every day called Eugene, and he always had some kind of little quip or joke to say. I remember, he came up to me one day. He was like, "Now, Pádraig, do you know what the Latin for Eugene is?" And I was like, "No idea, Eugene." "Eugenius." It's like, oh, good one. And yeah, there was one nice thing was as well, I used to burn songs onto a CD and just have music playing that was kind of some way upbeat, uplifting, or nothing too, you know, dreary or depressing. Because I remember when I started, they used to have I think the local radio station 96 FM on, which, you know, the music was a bit hit and miss, but then you'd also have the ads, you'd have the news, which tends to be more bad than good. And I just felt like it's nice to enter a shop with a good tune playing, get the, you know, you're entering into a place with a nice atmosphere from the get-go. And yeah, I think that's something that people mentioned as well, that there was always somewhat decent music playing. There was one time, actually, we had a volunteer from Syria. I can't remember his name, but because like there would have been hundreds of volunteers down through the years. But we used to have this tagging gun to put the tags on the clothes in the back of the shop. And the little plastic tags were in a kind of like a row, and you basically slot them into the gun and the tagging gun, and then you'd put the label and tag the label onto the clothes. And I was in the front of the counter one time serving customers, and then another volunteer came from the back of the shop, and he said to me, "Oh, hey, Parik," this is in front of all the customers, "Hey, Parik, the Syrian guy said that there's no more bullets for the gun." Just like every customer stopped talking and looked in our direction. And I was like, "Okay, yeah, I'll be there in a few minutes." That was kind of funny.
Am I mistaken in thinking that one time you guys got a priceless painting that someone threw out after someone had passed away, they found in an attic, and or is that like an urban myth?
No comment.
That's why you're living in a big mansion.
I don't remember priceless painting, but I do remember someone donated a violin, and I think we kind of figured out that it was quite it was a step up from the, you know, beginner violin, or so I think we managed to get managed to sell for a good few hundred euro. The interesting thing was we had it in a window display, and someone walked by the window, and then they came into the shop and they were like, "You know that violin in the window?" "Oh yeah." I was like, that belonged to me, or "That belongs to me." I was like, "Sorry?" And he's like, "Yeah, that was mine." Or, but in fairness to them, they said, I don't know, that somehow, I don't know, had it been stolen or mislaid, and it ended up in the charity shop, but they kind of they didn't kick up too much of a fuss. But that used to be funny, now that I say that. You know, you'd put the kind of better items in the window for 2 weeks, and then on the Friday morning, or every second Friday, you'd have a window sale where you would sell the items from the window. But like, there often would be a queue, and then it could get quite heated in terms of who was first to get the item. And yeah, I just always remember you'd be opening up the shutters in the morning, you know, opening the door to enter the shop, and the customers would be trying to get past you. And it's like, just give me 5 minutes here. I need to turn off the alarm and turn on the lights and stuff. So,
Jesus.
Yeah.
It sounds very colorful.
Black Friday, but still, for them, it was important.
You could write a book with all these these experiences. So it seems like there's a lot of things going on. But also, as well as, well, we've said now you've been teaching English as well for a while. But it's quite funny because a lot of the people that we speak to, you know, fall into teaching because, well, that's just kind of like the easiest job for them to do, perhaps here, at least to begin with. But you were actually quite keen on becoming an ESL teacher, weren't you? You quite enjoy it. So you've been doing it for several years. Are you still enjoying it? What are your impressions of the whole thing?
Yeah, I think it was actually from being in the charity shop and having volunteers whose English wasn't so good, and just kind of helping them out. And some of them would have been studying English in language schools in Cork, and hearing their stories and kind of thinking, oh, you know, it could be an interesting kind of road to go down. Or so, that was back in 2000 and 15 maybe. So yeah, it's quite a while ago. But yeah, from day one, I don't know, I found I enjoyed it. I like the atmospheres of the atmosphere of the classes. Again, you know, in Ireland, the students tended to be from all around the world. So just a very interesting mix. You'd have, you know, students from Saudi Arabia talking about getting lost in the desert and having to climb up the highest hill to try to see where the lights were to get back to civilization, or, you know, a student from Taiwan bringing in bubble tea for me to try in front of the class, which was kind of embarrassing because I didn't realize that bubble tea contained these kind of lumps of whatever the substance is, and me kind of slightly choking on them while 10 students stared up at me in silence. But yeah, like every job, there are some days when it can be a bit of a slog, or there are some times when it's just not working for whatever reason. But, you know, you take the bad days with the good and vice versa. It's quite different in Spain now, because back in Ireland, it was a big mixture of international students, most of them adults who would have paid good money to come to Ireland. So they tended to be quite motivated, focused, you know, they were there to learn as best they could. In the language school I'm teaching in Spain at the moment, there are a couple of adult classes, but there are also, you know, classes with teenagers and younger kids. Some of them are there to learn, others are there because mom and dad said, you're going to study English after school. So it's just a different dynamic. But again, that's part of the challenge. It's trying to get the best out of them in whatever way you think. I think one of the good things about being an ESL teacher is, you know, yeah, you can bring that element of creativity, spontaneity, and you have the freedom to maybe alter or change the way a class is going, depending on the energy of the students, depending on how they're responding or how they're not responding. And that's nice too. It kind of just brings it prevents it from getting boring or repetitive when you have that freedom to mix and match and, you know, try something new, see if it works. So yeah, I'll enjoy the job.
I think your ESL teaching kind of dovetails nicely with your love of music, because both are in their own ways international languages. No, everybody is rushing to learn English, and music, I think, is pretty universal. And both, I think, speak to your sense of or sensibility for creativity, you know, which you touched on as well when you mentioned about your curating these music kind of escapes for people in the charity shop. No, so as a musician, you've traveled around Ireland quite a lot with your one time band, the Modern Souls, as a drummer. What was it like exploring these sides of Ireland as a traveling musician? Was it sex, drugs, and rock and roll, or was it something quite different?
What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. I mean Nina. it was a lot of fun. Yeah, definitely. We, I was the drummer in the band, and my dad had a van, so I was a designated driver, basically. Which, like, the downside to that is, while the rest of the band are getting stuck into pints or bottles, you know, you're sipping on your second my wadi of the night. So yeah, I can never taste of my wadi again without getting flashbacks. But it was funny, like, we started off as just a pub band in Cashel. This was maybe 2006, so there was Cashel is a small town, but there was still a couple of pubs that would have live music on, and we were, you know, practiced a bit, then got a few gigs. And then it kind of just gradually took off over the years. We always had the intention of, you know, writing our own stuff, recording it. In the pubs, you know, we tended to play covers of Oasis, The Lads, all that kind of the Beatles, all that kind of guitar music. Then it was interesting going down the road of, you know, being an original band. My brother had an 8-track recorder, so we recorded like 2 or 3 songs onto that. Sent off the demos to like Hot Press magazine, the big music magazine in Ireland, and it was very exciting to see, you know, our band being reviewed in Hot Press by one of the writers. And then what else? Then we ended up going to Dublin to record a couple of songs with a guy called Gavin Glass. He has like a recording studio up there. That was another fun experience. It was my first time being in a, it was our, all our first time, I think, being in a proper recording studio. And just the change of mood and atmosphere from like being, from having played all together side by side to suddenly, you know, I was in one space, the bass player was off over there, the guitar player was in another section. And yeah, just it felt very stale and unnatural. And I think then, yeah, he made me play with a click track in my ear, which basically means you're wearing headphones and there's like a did. So basically you have to play along to that to keep you in time, because I think when he asked us to play the first song, he kind of nodded at the end. He was like, yeah, it's a bit loose, which basically means speeding up or slowing down. But and then I think we used to go up to Dublin to play gigs, but like from a drive up from Cashel to Dublin, it's like 2.5 hours, 3 hours, and coming back down again. And, you know, I think it took its toll over time. I remember as well, we were never the most professional or organized. We all had dreams and stuff, but then sometimes when it came down to like, you know, are we going to practice this weekend, or the practice maybe wasn't always as regular as it should have been. I think one time we were chatting about like, oh, one of the guys was saying, oh, we should move to Berlin like for a year and just, you know, really give the band a go. And I remember just kind of turning to him and going like, you know, we can't even practice 2 or 3 days a week in Ireland. Like, so what the hell are we going to move to Berlin for? But then as various members left, other members joined in. We had a keyboard player at one stage, and then we had 2 trumpet players, and then our sound went to more a brassy sound or soul music. So we started playing more music like Stevie Wonder, James Brown, what other songs, like Paul Simon. We started playing more weddings. The kind of originals fell by the wayside, and it was more, we became like a pub band / wedding band. So yeah, by the end of it, we were playing 2 or 3 gigs every weekend. The weddings were good, but it was a different type of vibe or atmosphere. There was always a feeling of more stress or pressure in terms of getting people onto the dance floor and keeping them there. Also, we tended not to really play waltzes, which every good wedding band should really play waltzes. And I remember one time I was kind of the drums tended to be at the back of the stage. I was at the back of the stage, and some guy came up to our guitar player and it's like, are you going to play any waltzes? And the guitar player, who wasn't the most diplomatic, kind of was just like, no, we're not. After the guy left, then the guitar player turned to me and said, I was this close to saying to him, sure, you're too fat to dance. So, yeah, glad he didn't say that. But yeah, I enjoyed most playing in the pubs, where there was just more of a, you know, a looser atmosphere. And as the night went on, then people just got more into it, had the crack dancing. And yeah, I was kind of at the back of the stage sitting on, looking at it all, taking it all in. It was quite the experience.
As you're talking about, you already have some anecdotes for things like weddings, but I hear you have some other crazy anecdotes about something to do with the Beatles costume or something like that. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah. So I think we were always big into the Beatles, and we used to play a lot of songs, and we were going to do the guitar player, Dennis, in the band. His brother Alan died tragically when he was quite young, and we said we'd do a fundraiser for the Mater Hospital, who do research into, you know, sudden adult death syndrome, etc. So we said we'd do a Beatles tribute night, and then we got the idea of renting the Sergeant Pepper's costumes to wear for the gig, and as well as the Sergeant Pepper's costumes, we had the kind of round John Lennon glasses in various, with the lens being in different colors, mustaches as well, and the Beatles wigs, the mop tops. So I think, I didn't have a credit card at the time, so I asked my brother, could I use his credit card to buy these online, and I'd pay him back. He said, no problem. So anyway, we put the order through for the wigs, the glasses, the mustaches. I think an hour or two later, he got a phone call from this number that he didn't recognize. And when he answered, it was like, oh, hello, I'm calling on behalf of Visa, your credit card company. I'm just ringing because there's been some unusual purchases made on your card of wigs and mustaches and glasses. And to cut a long story short, it turned out that these purchases had been flagged as suspicious on the basis that they could have been a disguise for someone who was on the run and who wanted to change their appearance. So, yeah, my brother had to explain to them they were actually being used for a Beatles tribute night rather than someone who was a fugitive trying to evade the law.
It's an easy mistake to happen, I guess.
Yeah. Exactly. Easy mistake to happen as well.
So, Porrick, I guess before we start wrapping up, and you play us a nice tune in a few moments as well, which our listeners will enjoy, I just want to ask you finally about your musical influences, because what I really enjoy about your love of music is that I get the sense that you're somebody who really lives it and does enjoy it. You know, I know you've been to Manchester to kind of take in the music scene there. You went to the Beatles Museum as well, and I know as well you've reveled in the fact that, you know, like Deb Gallagher brothers, they have Irish parents, Morrissey had Irish parents as well, and you kind of like investigate the stories and you know a lot about it, and you can also reel off quotes from songs, you know, very easily as well. So, you know, as somebody who travels to places where there's music, you know, who has music in their head in a quite big way, you know, you mentioned the Beatles. Is there any other sound or band that really speaks to you and has influenced you quite a lot?
Bad Bunny. No, that was a joke. There was an awkward silence there. Is this guy for real?
I dropped my monocle in shock.
as a teenager, you know, you kind of start getting into music, or you know, Oasis, Radiohead, Manic Street Preachers, the kind of typical guitar bands, some of them a bit angsty and stuff. And then, you know, as you get older and you kind of just maybe start appreciating more types of music, genre. So, I don't know, it's like, yeah. Sometimes it depends on your mood, you know. Like I like the idea of, in some countries, like say the USA, I think radio stations tend to focus on one genre. So you'd have like a rock station, you'd have a rap station, you'd have a jazz station. In Ireland, a lot of the stations play a mixture of different genres. And I just like that idea that you could stumble across something that you wouldn't necessarily, you know, hear. It wouldn't be part of your normal, you know, type of music. So, yeah, I don't know. It's just
eclectic. Yeah,
yeah. Like a good song is a good song. It's kind of like, for example, it's almost like in winter in Ireland, on a, you know, you go into a pub on a cold winter's day, you might ask for a hot whiskey to warm you up. You know, in the summertime, it's a pint bottle of Bulmers with ice. And I kind of think sometimes music is can be a bit like that. It's, you know, reggae doesn't sound so great on a cold day in December, but with the sun shining in June, it just kind of fits like a glove. And yeah, it's nice to be able to pick and choose from a variety of styles, depending on your mood, depending on the weather, depending on the time of day. I've noticed that, yeah, I'm not sure if you've heard of this style of music. It's quite popular in Spain, reggaeton. Maybe you have.
Rings a bell.
Yeah, I've noticed it's quite popular here, and it's still growing on me very, very slowly. But hey, you know, there's, yeah, we'll give it a shot. Like,
well, you know, it's funny. It's one of those strange things where it's very popular, but I've never met anybody who actually likes it. You know? So figure that one out, you know. But speaking of music, though, you have a Thin Whistle with you, and I think you're going to play an Irish classic. So you can play us out, Park. Before you do that, just let me say thank you so much for being here. It's been an absolute pleasure hearing your stories.
Thank you.
Okay, yeah, well, thanks a million, Maria. Thanks a million, Enda, for having me on. I enjoyed it. And this song, yeah, it's called Down by the Sally Gardens. I brought my tin whistle from Ireland. And yeah, hope you enjoy it.